Hey, everybody. Today on the Charlie Kirk Show, my conversation in Lubbock, Texas. That's right, Lubbock, Texas. We have a very fiery dialogue. I probably got a little more worked up than I should have at one point. So a little trigger warning there with a young lady about immigration. So enjoy that. And it is my conversation brought to you by Turning Point USA. Get involved with Turning Point USA at tpusa.com. Start your high school or college chapter today at tpusa.com. Email us, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. That is freedom@charliekirk.com. And subscribe to our podcast. Open up your podcast application and type in Charlie Kirk Show. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Noble Gold Investments is the official gold sponsor of the Charlie Kirk Show, a company that specializes in gold IRAs and physical delivery of precious metals. Learn how you could protect your wealth with Noble Gold Investments at NobleGoldInvestments.com. That is NobleGoldInvestments.com. It's where I buy all of my gold. Go to NobleGoldInvestments.com.
Thank you, everybody. Please take a seat. Thank you. It is, it's great to be back in Lubbock, Texas. I got to tell you, I was here earlier. Last fall, I guess I'll tell you why I was here. It's going to upset some of you. So my father and my uncle, my aunt, all went to the University of Oregon. So we're big Ducks fans. See, now you guys are going to get upset. See, and okay, first of all, I have nothing against, you know, I was a big Texas Tech fan. Rest in peace, Mike Leach, when he was here. And I was always pulling for, and I can't stand the Longhorns. They're awful. So we can agree on that, right? Okay. So we're all... And so we make a habit out of trying to go to a game or two, and Lubbock isn't too far from Phoenix where I live, and I come here. We have an amazing time, and everyone was super gracious, except for all the F-bombs, you know, being thrown at us Duck fans. And it was the goof. I was literally getting upset. I got to tell you what you guys do. This throwing the food thing on the – what is this all about? You know, there are tortillas flying, whatever. And then I learned they tried to get rid of it. And you guys kept the tradition alive. And I kind of had respect for it. I kind of said, you know what? You guys keep doing it. You know, no matter how much they try to tell you, you guys keep fighting the man and you keep on throwing. And I kid you not, I saw somebody up in the cheap sheets. There was a tortilla that flew like 150 yards and went right on the 30-yard line. And you guys put like holes in them to try to perfect the aerodynamicism. Do you guys at like the frat houses, like, you know, you try out or you... You kind of figure out the best way. I've never seen tortillas fly so far. So I needless to say, it was you guys totally choked. I got to be honest. It was not a good night at the end of it. But anyway, good memories for me, not so good for you. But and then we okay, it's very passionate folks here. And then we had a great Sunday at Trinity Church. So it's great to be back in Lubbock, Texas, everybody. And and do me a favor, anytime you ever play those Longhorns, you got to beat them. That's just, it's got to be right in there. So I don't want to talk for too long before we get to questions, because I think that's the most important and the most fun, and that's why you're here. I've done a lot of studying recently about the history of Texas, and it's fascinating. And this is kind of one of the last bastions of how Texas used to be and what the future of Texas should really look like, which Texas was largely unsettled. In fact, so much so that the Mexicans were like, if you guys can settle in Texas, like, you can have it. Like, if you're able to kind of figure something out in Texas, like, go ahead. It's not easy land. It's tough land. You have the Comanche Indians that were not exactly easy, you know, to live with, and, you know, very, very violent. And so my people, the Scots-Irish, were crazy enough to, you know, navigate the Appalachian Trail and go west and come to this place now known as Texas. And in the early stages of Texas, Texas was the closest thing to a Jeffersonian republic. There was really like no police, no standing army, and it was the law and the belief in the code of the West that kept Texas together. And it's very interesting. it's the most similar, the most eerily similar example I can find to how the Hebrews lived in the Old Testament, where they had no police and no standing army. And it wasn't perfect. People still, you know, did bad things. But Texas turned into this powerhouse where so many different cultures and different civilizations said, you know, we don't really want to settle there. And for whatever reason, Texas all of a sudden started to grow and became its own country first, the Republic of Texas. And anytime you spend time around Texans, there's something different. There's, you're Americans, but you're also Texans. I'll never forget the first time I did a speaking event in Texas. They did this Hail Texas flag thing, and then also I was like, what? This is really nothing against it, because I love people that are proud of where they're from and thankful for where they're from. And in the clearest possible way, Texas needs to start acting like Texas again. And Texas needs to get that attitude back where you need to go tell the federal government to go pound sand, you're going to secure the border yourself. And Texas, which 20 years ago was nowhere in comparable population, has 10 million more people than the state of New York. This place is one of the best places America still has to offer. And I'll give you another example. Texas never should have locked down for the virus lockdowns that happened during COVID. And the spirit of Texas is one of self-sovereignty, one of liberty, one that tends to buck the trend. And I firmly believe this, that America cannot get back to greatness, which I think a lot of you guys are here tonight because you want to see America made great again. I think that's why a lot of you are here. That would be a great slogan if someone ran for president on that. That would be really great. And it cannot happen if Texas just becomes a flatter version of Tennessee. Texas needs to go back into its roots of the can-do attitude, to look towards that pioneer spirit. And there is a toughness in the Texans that I've known that is very, very unique. There is an attitude, too. You guys got attitude like, holy crow, you guys got attitude. But I love it. And I love it in a way where a lot of people are now looking for leadership, obviously, and what an opportunity. And we look around the country right now, people are moving to the state. And what drives me nuts, I'm sure you know this, if you spend any time in Travis County in Austin or in Harris County in Houston, a lot of people are moving to the state and they continue to act and vote in the pattern that they previously had when they destroyed the state that they fled from. And I mean, they destroyed California, and then they come to Texas and they say, oh, I don't like the fact that, you know, in Texas, you can own firearms the way you can't. Like, then why'd you move here exactly? Why'd you try to come here and try? Like, another thing that drives me crazy is they like, we need to expand abortion access in Texas. And I'm like, well, where are you from? And they're like, well, I'm from Massachusetts. Like, okay, then go back to Massachusetts. They have abortion all over the place. Like, don't tell Texas how to run itself, actually. Stop trying to colonize Texas. And I think there's a really important thing. Again, it's not a racial thing either, and this is what's so amazing, is that some of the most proud Texans are originally from Mexican descent, and they're on the border, and they're part of the Texas story. And I think we can all agree, though, and I want to just emphasize this, and then we'll do questions, is that what's happening on the southern border is one of the most outrageous crimes against this country that we have seen in any of our lifetimes. And it is To have anywhere between 10 to 15,000 people coming across the border is an invasion. I don't care what your politics are. You could be here, you could be on the super far left. It doesn't matter. It's unsustainable. And this is not a racial thing, but the bad guys actually look at it as a racial thing. Now, in a very perverse way, they might end up being wrong, but it's still wrong what they're doing. Because they think, and it's not my belief system of this, but just look at what the Castro brothers have said repeatedly. They said that as Texas becomes more Hispanic and less white, they thought that Texas would become more left-wing. Well, it's not that simple, actually, because it turns out the Hispanic community is not a monolith, and that there's a lot of Hispanic conservatives out there that don't believe that men can give birth, and they want a secure border, and they want police, and they want a rule of law. So it's not that simple. But what it does do, outside of the politics, is it does destabilize a country. And that's the bigger point, is that you cannot have an unregulated flow of millions of people. We're not doing background checks. We're not doing DNA testing. We have no idea where they're from. And act or even believe that somehow a stable country can continue. And for those of you that either came to this country legally or your parents did, what is happening on the southern border is an insult to all of you that waited in line. It is an insult for all of you that had to go through the proper protocol and process. That basically what it is why did you follow the law? And what they're saying basically is you don't have to follow the law anymore. And I've been patient, and I actually have seen more and more fight out of your governor recently. I wish it would have happened earlier. And I want to see that next step taken. And I think his administration is getting closer and closer to that, which is it is now time for Texas to start to deport the foreigners that have come here to this state and return them to their country of origin. It is time to now do that. And largely because the federal government has left us no choice. And it is a very simple moral question. If the federal government is tasked with the safety and the well-being and the administration of the rule of law, and they have year over year told you they are not going to do that, Texas, which was once its own country, which can therefore declare an invasion clause easier than any other state in the nation, does not just have a right, but a duty to take this into its own hands and to fix this problem. And I think Greg Abbott, to his credit, has been feeling the pressure and has been doing some stuff. I mean, you got the barriers, you got the razor wire, you got balloons on the, you know, whatever those big things are in the big objects in the Rio Grande Valley. That's fine. You got the National Guard. It's hard for me to paint this picture. If you haven't seen the video, I encourage you to look at it, where Texas National Guard really steamrolled by hundreds of people last week as if, like, no, this is our country. We're just going to come right in. And, you know, some people say, well, the Texas National Guard should have resisted. But the Texas National Guard, in an ideal, should have resisted. But think about it. They would have gotten probably arrested by the federal government for, you know, violent confrontation of migrants. And that's another important point, which is there are some people that are coming that can fit the quote-unquote migrant mold. But a vast majority of these people are military-age, fighting-age males that are 20, 21, and 22 years old from 120 different countries. We know that thousands of people have been intercepted on the southern border from the terror watch list, and we have no idea where they're going on the interior of the United States. And I hate to say, but this feels awfully intentional. It feels as if that they want this to happen. Now, why? We can have a robust discussion about it, but I don't get from the current ruling regime that they love the country like you do, that they love the country the way that those of you that serve this nation do. In fact, I feel as if they want to turn it into something different, that they want to try to overwhelm the system. Before some of you yell up and say, you're a conspiracy theorist, well, you guys should study an academic paper that is called the Cloward-Piven Strategy. It was written in the 1970s by two academics, Cloward and Piven. They were communists, self-described Marxists and communists. And they said, hey, the way that we communists are going to take over America is three steps, three very basic things. We need to try to make sure America borrows so much money that the currency is worthless and the national debt becomes unsustainable. We need to try to build an administrative state or a deep state bureaucracy that swallows the private sector and have D.C. be the most important part of the country, and uncontrolled mass migration into America to destabilize the fabric. Now, we wouldn't know any one of those three things, of course. We are borrowing $1 trillion every 100 days in this country. For those of you that want to own a home, for those of you that want to have a future, it is literally getting stolen from you by these unelected bureaucrats in Washington, D.C. Again, this is not a political statement. In 2020, when there was a different president, the average income to be able to afford a home in this country was $59,000 a year, according to Zillow.com. It is now $106,000 a year to be able to comfortably own a home in this country. Now, it might be less here in Lubbock, Texas. I don't know. I mean, I bet property has gone up everywhere. I bet it's gone up here, too. And but it's probably a little bit easier here. But your incomes are probably not as high as they are in Dallas. So it all kind of evens out. And by the way, that's what they want. They don't want you to own homes. They want you to be permanent renters for the rest of your life because you're easier to control. When I was landing here in Lubbock, I saw so many small towns, and it reminded me how mass urbanization has destroyed this country. And there's something very dark about big cities, not just the fact that the worst ideas come out of cities, not just the fact that the worst politics come out of big cities and the most crime, but I want you to think for a second. It's very easy to be anonymous in a big city. You don't have to know your neighbor. You can kind of just blend in. For those of you that have grown up in a small town, it is impossible to be anonymous in a small town. That there's an accountability. Your neighbors check in on you. Everyone kind of has a reputation in a small town. That's the drunk. That's the thief. That's the priest. Stay away from that guy. That's the guy you want to try to do business with. Everybody has, for better or worse, but everybody has a reputation because that closeness creates community. In New York City, you can kind of just be an anonymous, you know, widget in an 8 million person beast. I don't think that's a good thing, actually. I think it's a better country when you're held accountable by your neighbors. I think it's a better country when you know your neighbors' names. I think it's a better country where you own property and you go to church and your kids are raised walking around a farm, not staring at a screen all day long. I think it's a better country when you don't have to wonder that you're going to have to go riskily into debt to be able to own a home. And these might strike you as overwhelmingly political statements, but they really aren't, because it's the restoration of a normal way of life. And you guys still have it a little bit here in West Texas. And if there's one thing I can communicate to you, is you need to fight to protect that thing. Because how many pockets around this country have they allowed us to lose that American way of life? Where they come in with big developers and mass urbanization and cities that used to be very, very, let's just say, livable, just become kind of unthinkably progressive. And they are targeting West Texas. They are targeting Amarillo. They are targeting Lubbock because they look at themselves as imperialists, that there will not be a square inch where they don't control. There's a book that was recently published, and I can't help but just think of so many of you. The book's title is called White Rural Rage, The Threat to Democracy. And so if you get in a car and go 30 miles west or 30 miles east from here, you will find the people that this book is talking about. These are two professors that wrote this book, and they were beautifully welcome on MSNBC. And for those of you that own farms and you work with your hands and you go to church, you happen to be white, they think you're the threat to democracy. I think, first of all, how sick you must be to blame the people that have done the right thing for the last 100 years and originally were homesteading and raised a family and paid their taxes, many of whom served in the military. And they blame the white rural rage voters because they don't think the way that the Harvard academics want them to think. And in fact, dare I say that it is the white rural rage that very well might save this country one day. It very well might end up course correcting us. And it's not a racial thing, but they're making it a racial thing because it's those that own property and they have different values than that of the regime. So we need Texas to be Texas again for that attitude and that spirit to be reignited. And I'm just so touched. I mean, look at this turnout here on campus. There's something happening. I don't know what it's going to look like or how it's going to manifest politically. I've been doing this now for 11 years. I have visited more college campuses than any other speaker in the last decade. I've never seen crowds like we are drawing right now. And I believe it's because so many of you in Gen Z, you are up, you have reached your limit of the nauseating woke nonsense that has permeated the culture, that you actually don't want to worry about getting fired from your job for using the wrong pronoun, that you want an America that is strong, that is decent, that is stable, that is orderly. You want to be able to get married and have kids. And this is one of the reasons why, and again, this is what the data shows, why young men are the most conservative that they have been in the last 50 years. And young ladies, we got some work to do, but and shows a lot of promise, because I truly believe that there are more decent Americans than indecent Americans, and that we're going to course correct this. And the entire spirit of Turning Point USA is we do want to see this country return to greatness. And we believe we return to greatness by recommitting ourselves to foundational principles and by not being afraid to confront the parasitic ideologies that have been destroying this country. And what are those ideologies? You can call them wokeism, you can call them Marxism, but they are decaying the society all around us. And it's resulting in an untouchable oligarchy that is not listening to the people, that is more and more afraid that the silent majority might be silent no longer. And as we can see here by this incredible turnout and what's happening, I think our numbers are increasing to such a level that keeps them very nervous. Let's do some questions, everybody, and thanks for sitting through that. Okay, so you can start lining up for questions. Let me tell you how questions are going to work. This is obviously a predominant conservative audience. If you disagree, you get to go to the front of the line. Now, if somebody who is a liberal comes up and asks a question, do not boo them, do not make fun of them, do not make noise. Show any liberals or people that have different ideas the respect that we as conservatives never get from the left, okay? That's what we're going to do here tonight. And so you could start lining up here if you have questions. And again, disagreements get precedent. And please try to remain as quiet as you can. I'll let you get it out of your system. And I tell you, if you guys start throwing tortillas at me, you didn't bring any? All right. Yes, ma'am, you are first.
As someone who's been doing these college tours for, I think you said 11 years, how do you prioritize spending time with your wife and your children?
Well, that's a great question. Yeah, you have to learn to say no. And this should tell you how important it is for me to be here tonight, because I say no to like 99% of the speaking events and engagements that I get asked to go to. And so, and yeah, I mean, one of the life preservation tools that the Lord gives us is he tells us in the Ten Commandments, for 6 days you shall work and for one day you shall rest. And so people ask if I'm Seventh-day Adventist. I'm not, but I do honor the Shabbat. I turn off my phone on Friday night. I turn it back on Sunday morning. It works for me. And I believe one of the great failures of modern Christianity is our failure to honor the Sabbath. Whether we like it or not, there is way too much work that occurs. And again, your Sabbath can be Sunday. It can be Saturday. I am not a legalist on that. I do Saturday because it works for my schedule. I'm less likely to have to do work on Saturday. It's a good end of the week. That's fine. If it's Sunday is your day. However, most Christians that I encounter, I ask them this question. If I walked into your house on Saturday or Sunday, would I be able to tell which day is the Sabbath? And if the answer is no, then it's not actually the Sabbath. If you walk into my house on the Sabbath, my phone is off and my electronic devices are off. The only exceptions I make are for things that I truly enjoy, like college football or college basketball, because that's not work. For 6 days you shall work, for one day you shall rest. So it's nourishing to me, right? But anything that involves work, I don't read a newspaper, I don't visit a news website, I don't listen to a radio program. And so that's my only challenge to you, is that your Sabbath, that if somebody walked into the day that you designate as your Sabbath, they should be able to see something different. In Hebrew, the word holy, so to keep the Sabbath holy is repeated over 10 times in the Old Testament. To keep holy means separate, it means distinct, it means different than. And so to keep it holy means that that day must look, feel, and act different than any other day of the week. So whatever that means for you, make it happen. Do something that you enjoy that is restful, and most importantly, spend time with your family and do something that honors your Creator. Thank you.
Okay, Kirk fans, I need you to stop and pay attention to this. If you deal with exhaustion, brain fog, mood swings, or food cravings, if you're constantly getting sick or simply lack the zeal you used to have in life, then I have some news for you. A while back, I found a liquid supplement called Strong Cell, and it changed my health in a very profound way. I take it every single day. Look, I knew I had to partner with them. I did the research, Google, and look up online what happens when you mix NADH with CoQ10 and marine collagen. It's simple. Every area of your body has cells, so if your cells are healthier, then you will also be healthier. You don't have to take my word for it. Listen to one of these testimonials. After taking Strong Cell for 6 weeks, I found improvement in many areas, less shoulder pain, improved mental clarity, increased natural energy, and so much more. I'm thankful that Charlie Kirk recommended this to his listeners. Rebecca says, I absolutely love Strong Cell. At first, I didn't think it would make much of a difference for my chronic fatigue, depression, and anxiety, but I thought I'd give it a chance. I've tried to find depression meds for 10 years, and since you use Strong Cell, I'm feeling better than I ever have on depression medication. Customer for life. Thank you, Charlie Kirk, for recommending this product. So there it is. You've heard from me directly and some of the users who have seen their lives changed by Strong Cell. I personally recommend taking it every day for at least 30 days. I take it every day before I go on the air, and it's helped me in more ways than I can even name. Each of our bodies is very different, so I would recommend you give the supplement at least 2 to 3 months to see the changes in your body. Go to strongcell.com and learn more for yourself. That's strongcell.com/Charlie. And don't forget to use discount code Charlie at checkout to get your special 20% discount for Kirk listeners. Or you can call 888-596-0155 to order over the phone. That is 888-596-0155 or visit strongcell.com/Charlie.
As a student in college trying to find a partner, what are some qualities I should look for in a future wife?
Yeah, that's a great question. Proverbs 31, try to find a Proverbs 31 woman. The most important thing I would say, though, you have to agree politically, and you have to agree most important theologically and religiously. I do not believe in marriages where people say, I'm a conservative, I'm a liberal. That is a bad idea. It does not work out. And for example, what values are you going to pass down to your kids? You're going to kind of like, you get 50% of the dinner and they get 50% of the dinner. It doesn't work. There's enough already. There are enough quarrels that already happen in marriage. You don't need to add outside disagreement into something holy. That is, marriage is holy and it should remain holy. Secondly, the most important thing, though, is you should ask is, what should I do as a man to prepare myself for my wife? And that is, and I say this as someone who once struggled with pornography and very open about it. Almost every young man in this audience has struggled with pornography. Not everyone admits it, but it's just true. It's a societal toxin. It's a cancer. And I love that Pornhub, whatever, is now closed in Texas. I think that's a great thing. It is shut down, and it's a great thing. Is try and not do that and not engage in that. I highly recommend that the sooner as a college student you understand, if it makes you feel good immediately, it comes with a price, and that price is heavier than that which you realize. So if it gives you a buzz of alcohol, again, I'm not trying to be overly legalistic, but the sooner you realize that the thing that gives you the buzz instantaneously comes at a price, and I don't drink, don't do drugs, and that's the only way I'm able to keep the schedule that I keep and do what I'm able to do, is because that stuff doesn't do anything for me. It actually leads a really shallow and empty life, and that's not something that I think is really interesting. In fact, I think that's kind of what losers do, is they kind of just pursue the next instant gratification. I think the beautiful things actually come with delayed gratification in life, where you delay the pleasure because you go for something that is greater than pleasure, which is hopefully glorifying God, which is greater than just making yourself feel good. As a man, try to become the most interesting person you can, and you will have to be the breadwinner and the income producer for your family. And so you need to take, before you get married or before you date, you need to make sure that if you date with the intention of marrying, because don't just date casually. Dating casually is the stupidest thing ever. You need to date with the intention to marry, that you can be able to support your wife and support a child. And so you need to figure that out, whatever that is, right? Whatever you're studying, make sure that it can have, you know, a good payout in the end, and that you can comfortably be able to provide for your family, because that is the role of the man. Thank you, man. Appreciate it.
I just wanted to start out by saying that I fully respect the work that you're doing here and respect the passion and intelligence that you have. There's no ignoring the issue that we have on the southern border. But I think it is fair that we acknowledge the root of this issue might be partly due to a broken immigration system that has not been updated in around 50 years. I stand here as living proof of the immigrant dream, the illegal immigrant dream, the American dream. It is very easy to say that illegal immigrants need to go back to their countries and they are criminals when you are so far removed from the immigrant experience. Do you not think that making the immigration process, the legal immigration process, a little bit easier could not help solve some of these backlogging issues, and giving people reasons for being denied when they are applying for visas or naturalization would not help solve this problem? Should people who are here legally, who have only come here to work for a better life for their children, who are only here to work hard and commit no crimes, a chance of becoming legal without them being sent back to their countries?
So, yes, they should be sent back. But are you illegal or are your parents illegal?
My father was illegal. He married my mother, and now he is a citizen of this great nation.
Okay, and then you were born here?
I was born here, yes.
Okay, thank you. So let me ask you just a theoretical question. If somebody robs a bank because they can't feed their family, should they be prosecuted for that crime?
Yes.
Okay. So, therefore, we should not relax the immigration laws just because someone has a good story or they want to feed their family.
But do you not think that robbing a bank is a little bit different than just moving across land?
Hold on.
Restricting people's
movement. Hold on a second. Breaking into the country. Let me ask you a question. Because it's breaking and entering, right?
Okay.
Your father, did he know he was breaking the law when he came into this country?
My father was 14 years old when he came to this country.
Did he know it was illegal?
Yes, he knew it was illegal. However, he was a child and came by himself.
Okay. Well, he knew it was against the law. So we have penalties for juvenile people that break into banks and break into cars. So he knew the laws, he broke the laws, and he cut in line. Was he invited or did he come uninvited?
He was not invited.
Okay.
However,
so what should we do to uninvited people that break our laws? How should we handle those people?
Can we not acknowledge the fact that my father, coming from a dirt poor farm community in Mexico, would have had zero opportunity to do so legally?
Well, but why does he have a right to come here in the first place? You don't have a moral right to enter the United States. Get in line like the Polish and the Irish and the Vietnamese. So just because you live close, I acknowledge that he came from a poor country. Afghanistan is poor. There are a lot of poor countries. Zimbabwe is a lot poorer than Mexico. So we could make that argument to let in 100 million people. So is the argument that we should allow people that have a sob story, which is your father's case, entrance into our country when they were not invited?
I think it's hardly a sob story. I think the work that my father has put into his life to become now a citizen and build a life for himself and be able to send his children to college would hardly be considered a sob story.
You said he came from a dirt poor country,
right,
which is
exactly
an emotive sob story argument. But let me just ask another theoretical question. What should the penalty be for breaking and entering into a country illegally? What should the penalty be?
The penalty? I think that is something that needs to be looked at as options to allow people who came here illegally, who have worked hard and who have not committed any crimes
They did commit a crime. They committed a crime when they crossed the southern border. So your father's a criminal. And
father's not a criminal. He
broke USC federal law that says you shall not enter the United States across the southern border without proper documentation or without proper entrance. He knew what he was doing. And when he did that, every day he was here and illegally domiciled himself was a crime. If you squat into somebody's home uninvited, every day you are committing a crime. Yes?
I'm
sure that he applied himself nicely. I'm sure he raised a nice person, a nice individual such as you. I don't doubt any of that. The question, though, is the law. And the law must be blind to any sort of nice, beautiful story. He was not invited.
Why do we not think about reforming this law?
Hold on. So should we repeal the law that says you cross the border, you should then be, it's illegal. Should it be illegal to come into America uninvited?
I'm not saying that it should be legal. I'm saying that this whole process should be changed. Maybe if my dad would have had the opportunity, he would have come legally.
Could have. Hold on. People come legally from Mexico all the time.
Absolutely.
Why didn't your father come legally?
He was 14, uneducated, did not go to school.
Okay, so got it. Now we're getting somewhere. So he was poor, and so we should make exceptions for poor young people.
That's not at all what I'm saying.
Yes, it is.
No, that's not at all what I'm saying.
You're saying that he didn't have the resources, so we should kind of just relax the laws. So let me just be very clear. We set the laws in America for the good of the people of this country, not for the good of the people of Mexico.
Absolutely.
Period. And so there is no relaxing and there is no compromise on this. Your father should have been deported, and he should still be deported, because he has to pay for the crime when he broke into our home.
You think my father, who is a voting citizen of this country, should be deported?
He has to pay a penalty for breaking into America, and he never did. Unless he served prison time, did he?
No.
Okay, then he has to pay a penalty.
Because my father's not a criminal.
But your father is a criminal. He broke a federal law that says you cannot break into America. If someone came up here and they said, you know, my father broke into a bank or my father held up a grocery store, but he raised a beautiful child, I'd say, wait a second, did he ever serve prison time? And thank you for acknowledging you must apply the law regardless of how nice the story is. And so I'll ask the question again, should we get rid of that law? Should we just say amnesty? We give forgiveness to all who broke the law. You are now here.
No, but why do we not put forth resources to try and help these people go through a legal process?
Well, we do. Hold on. You can apply on the Department of Homeland Security.
Do we understand how many applications are backlogged? When you're denied applications,
point.
You are giving no reason for why your application is being denied.
You don't have
you
a right to come here, though.
And hundreds
this is
and
what's
hundreds
important.
Of dollars for having no idea why your application is being denied.
Your whole
people
premise
think
is
they
wrong.
Have no other choice.
You have a choice. Go
that
make Mexico
so
great.
That is very easy to say like, when you are so
on.
Far removed from the immigrant experience that your family came
hold on
here
a second.
When immigration
yes,
was
you're right. My
easier.
Family did help
right.
found the country. You're right.
Absolutely.
So let me...
On my wife's side, they did too. Because that's
hold on a second. Your family's from Mexico.
No,
my
dad.
Family got here in 1620
yes,
and settled the country.
Side,
your father broke into the country that my family helped build, okay?
Excuse
let's
me.
Let's be very clear.
Excuse me.
Your family broke into the country that my family served in a military for. You came uninvited. And now you come up here and you say, well, I think my father's this great story. No, no, your father couldn't wait in line. He could not go make Mexico great again. So he came into the country that he screwed up all the process. Let me finish. Hold on 1 second. Where do you get the moral right to act as if we should even accept one immigrant? Where do you get that from?
My question to you is, yes, your family was here. They got to come here legally, right? They got to build this country.
In 1620, yes. They settled. They did not immigrate. They came to a country that was barren, that was empty, and they helped found the country nearly 400 years ago.
Yes, and on my mother's side, they did the same
and
thing.
And they came here and they followed all the customs and all the laws. Your father didn't do that.
Because there were no customs or laws.
Well, yes, there was. You know what the custom laws was? If you don't die, it's yours.
Right.
That was the custom and laws.
There was no restriction on where people could move and make a better life for themselves.
Yeah, because there was nothing. There was the Indians and weather, and it was 1620. If you didn't die of smallpox... or die of whatever. So let me just try to find some understanding of common ground. Right now, there are 5 million people that have illegally entered the United States in the last couple of years. What should happen with them?
Of the people who have entered the United States
illegally in the last, since Biden became president, about 5 million people, what should we do with them?
I think that they should have to face some sort of application if they want the legal rights of being in this country. I think that there needs to be some kind of reform to look at their situations and see what, because getting rid of 5 million immigrants or however many immigrants that are here illegally in this country would have drastic
effects. No, there's 30 million. I'm talking about just the 5 in the last couple of years. But what implications would it have?
But if we're going to look at the 30 million people that are here illegally, if we were to get rid of all of them right now, this is not a racist slur, our construction industry in this country would be absolutely deteriorated.
Hold on. How dare you say something like that?
There are plenty.
Do you know what would happen? Wages would go up because Americans would get the jobs who didn't steal Social Security numbers. That's what would happen.
Then why can't
we would have higher wages. We would have less crime. We would have less drug trafficking into this country. And again, if these people build such a beautiful life, like your father, why couldn't they do that back in Mexico? If he's like contribute so beautifully, go back to Mexico and enrich that country. Right?
Because he was not lucky enough to be born in a country where he had those opportunities. We are all lucky enough to just be born here. We have no idea what it's like to want a better life for your children when you have no other
hold
option.
On. A lot of people here have been born poor and have worked really hard.
Exactly.
Yes. And secondly, and I'll close with this. You're right. It is hard work to make a nice country. It's easy work to destroy a nice country. And a country is destroyed when you have uncontrolled amounts of people and you have no idea who they are and they're not invited. And then we have to then be told we have a moral right to stay here because you didn't deport me in time. It's like, okay, either we have the law or we don't. And it's fine. If your position is to get rid of the law, that is a position that people in this country have. I'm going to say that ceasing to abide by the American immigration code, which is we should know and have control over who comes into this country, then you're not a country. You're just kind of a territory, and whoever wants to come can come. And that would be the end of the United States of America. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
I just want to start off by saying that it's always great to be politically active than to not be politically active. So I thank you for that. But I do want to start off by saying earlier I was outside protesting, as I usually do on campus, with a sign that says, tear the fascists down. Now, for those who don't know what fascism is, it's an ideology associated with Nazism. As I had this sign, not affiliating it to anybody, I had a group of individuals come up to me saying openly they were fascists attending your event and called me the F word while at it. It's not lies. Now, I am not here to call you a fascist. I'm not. As I know you're not a Nazi sympathizer, you've never openly sympathized Nazism. I can see that. But people who openly call themselves fascists are here and are not afraid to admit they are fascists. So my question is, will you denounce fascism today as the definition online puts it as an ideology including racial nationalism and authoritarianism today?
Yes. Will you denounce Marxism as the greatest killer of human beings in the last 100 years?
Well, describe Marxism to me.
I'm sorry, what?
Describe Marxism to me.
The ideology that Mao Zedong, Joseph Stalin, Vladimir Lenin, and Pol Pot employed to the massacre of our...
It did kill millions of people. You're right. Correct.
Okay, so I'll denounce fascism. You denounce Marxism. Yeah?
Well, I would have to say, like, by definition... No. Hold on. So my thing is that was it Marxism itself or was it a materialistic condition that caused that? Because as Marxists, what we do say is that there's material conditions that contribute to society. Now, you probably aren't familiar with dialectical materialism. I'll try to explain it real quick.
No, I've read the Phenomenology of Spirit, and I know Hegel. But okay. But tell me, but why not denounce Marxism? I mean, Mao Zedong, Marxist, Lenin, Marxist, Joseph Stalin, Marxist.
I'll denounce Joseph Stalin for you, definitely, yes. Joseph Stalin was an authoritarian leader who definitely killed millions of Ukrainians during the export of grain to, of course, build up their economy.
But there's nothing about – you don't think there's anything about the ideology that leads to the suffering, impoverishing, or the murdering?
Well, just like how Hitler called himself a socialist, it's not the ideology. It's just what you actually do in practice.
Yes, he did call himself a socialist.
Yeah.
But he was not a Marxist.
He was not, yeah.
But the National Socialist Workers' Party is the actual name of Nazism. But where has Marxism ever worked?
Well, I wouldn't say that Marxism itself has ever actually been tried. Now, of course, you can always say that's an easy communist getaway question to it, right?
Well, but Marxism has killed a lot more people than Hitler. Everywhere it's tried, it results in famine, impoverishing, death, destruction. I mean, every failed country on the planet right now, including North Korea, is some form of a Marxist dictatorship.
Well, if,
so why is it hard to denounce that? Because it's easier for me to denounce fascism. Why the struggle to just say, Marxism, bad, evil, end of story? Why can't we agree on that?
Well, because if you look at, I'll give the example of North Korea. What we did is that we went in there during the Korean War and destroyed all their factories, right? Now, what did this lead? This left an impoverished society where they now had no means to, of course, get their needs because their factories were destroyed. So that's number one on why North Korea. Now, I don't like North Korea. I'm just saying that's one reason
why.
It
has nothing to do with the Marxist leader? Nothing?
He's not a Marxist leader. I wouldn't consider himself a Marxist leader.
So what ideology is his?
So the ideology of Marxism is simply that workers own the means of production. The workers in North Korea do not own the means of production.
Well, do they have private property rights in North Korea?
They don't.
Then who owns the means of production?
The government does.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but in a Marxist society. No, but in a Marxist
society.
That
would be Marxism?
No, it's not, because the workers own the means of production, not the government.
But who is the government?
The government is the people, the bureaucrats.
Oh,
the bureaucrats
who
control the power.
Okay, and that would be the people, the bureaucrats, owning the means of production, otherwise known as Marxism?
No. You're getting it all wrong. Literally, the word definition of Marxism is that workers own the means of production.
Right. So where has that ever been tried or worked? You say it's never been tried ever?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay, got it. So even though the hammer and sickle and core Marxist ideology has been invoked repeatedly by these leaders, you're saying, no, not a Marxist. Over 100 times it has been tried on every single continent, from Mugabe in Rhodesia, which became Zimbabwe, to parts of India, to China, to Korea, to parts of Eastern Europe, to Central and South America, to Venezuela. None of that is Marxist, even though they say they're Marxist.
Well, it's tampering with Marxism because you have sanctions and you bomb their country. So, I mean, if you want to call that Marxism, then if you sanction and bomb them, I guess that's Marxism.
Wait, so how have we sanctioned and bombed these markets? Like Venezuela?
Like Venezuela has sanctions to where we don't buy their oil anymore.
Yeah, why do you think we're sanctioning them?
Because they have Marxist ideologies that don't incorporate with capitalist ideology.
Well, yeah, they're also like a quasi-terror state. But let's talk about Venezuela. Mm-hmm. Venezuela used to be rich and prosperous when they had the private ownership of minerals. Mm-hmm. Why is Venezuela now one of the poorest countries in South America? What ideology caused that?
See, but that's the thing, though. It's not the ideology. It's the practice. Now, you could say the practice is Marxism, but again, do the workers own the means of production in that country?
Somebody does.
Yeah, somebody does, but not the workers.
Yeah, the government, so then, the government owns. So, I mean, in like the purest form of Das Kapital Marxism, mm-hmm. it is the government that comes in and abolishes private property, correct?
This is, of course, called, I think, the dictatorship of the proletariat, I think is what you're referring to.
Right. So let me ask you a question. So you believe in this like abstract Marxism that you don't ever want to denounce, even though it's been tried 100 times.
But if again, you say try, but we just said that it hasn't been tried because workers haven't owned the means of production.
Okay. Well, why do you think that is? Because they use the swan song of Marxism, and Marxism will always result in an oligarchy or a dictatorship. Okay. Because you know why? It's impossible to, quote unquote, have the workers owns the means of production because we don't share well as human beings. That's why only someone that has, and with all possible due respect, an infant understanding of human nature can think communism can work, because we're self-interested at our core. And you have an economic system that is built not on private property, but on quote-unquote shared goods. You're going to have a dictator on top of it that is going to exploit and terrorize. And so you started this conversation by asking me to denounce fascism, which is responsible for about 10 to 15 million deaths, that ideology. I'm pleading you one more time to denounce Marxism, that is responsible for minimum 100 to 120 million deaths.
Okay, academics have proven that wrong. That's not true. That's from the Black Book of Communism. That has
How many people did Mao kill?
Mao killed about 30 to 40 million.
How many people did Stalin kill?
Stalin killed about 20 to 30 million.
Okay, now we're at like 60 million, and I just named like two countries, man. Mm-hmm. Okay? So like we're out of the gate, and we're at like 60 million. Okay? Yeah. So I can keep on going, right, if you want to talk famine, impoverishing, lowering of standard of living. But what I want to just reiterate as we close this out, there's this pathological fascination with fascism, 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 and a complete ignoring that Marxism, which is the other side of the authoritarian coin, has been far deadlier, far more costly, and is far more popular. And I'll ask this final question. What do you think has a greater chance of catching on in America, fascism or Marxism?
I would say fascism.
Okay. You really think so?
I really do believe that.
Okay. The only way I would possibly agree with that is the left-wing fascists that shut up people on campuses and allow, you know, try to stop freedom of speech. But what it's just I'm perplexed by your position and your inability and your unwillingness to denounce Marxism. I don't know how many, maybe another 100 million people dead, maybe you'd change your mind.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Hey, this is Charlie Kirk, and I know a lot of you have been suffering under the Biden economy. Recently, school loan payments have been reinstated, and for many, it's adding thousands to their monthly expenses. My friends, Andrew Del Rey and Todd Avakian, they're amazing. They really helped me through a tough, tough situation recently. They've been excellent. They're ethical. They're just really great people. They're followers of Jesus Christ, and our worldviews are the same. I love them. And so please go to andrewandtodd.com. Interest rates are coming down, and they may be able to lower your overall payment. In fact, one of our team members said, Charlie, is it time to me to own a home? I sat down. I went through the numbers. I said, get in the owner game. Honestly, enough renting. You are burning your money renting. It might be a little bit more to own, but you're building equity. That's money you'll have for the rest of your life. Perhaps a reverse mortgage is the perfect solution. It's about expertise you could trust in times like this. I can't tell you how helpful they've been for me personally. They've just been excellent. Andrew and Todd, I'm honored to call them friends. We hang out when I go to Orange County together. They're really great. So say, Charlie sent me 888-888-1172. That's 888-888-1172. They helped me through a mortgage situation recently that was super complex and moving pieces, and it was really, really tough. And other banks, by the way, wanted nothing to do with it, and they crushed it for me. 10 out of 10. AndrewandTodd.com. So check it out right now. AndrewandTodd.com.
Hello. Thank you for coming to speak on our campus. So in America, we have a huge problem to where additives and preservatives are put in our foods, contributing to cancer and neurological disorders in children. So as a conservative, how do you believe the FDA should be regulated or reformed to improve health for all Americans?
It's a great question. Boy, first of all, people need to go to jail for what they did during COVID at the FDA and the CDC. I'll tell you what. I don't have a great technical policy answer, but the FDA is basically purchased by Big Ag, and we need to divest from high fructose corn syrup. It's one of the great poisons that is creating obesity in this country. And cancer rates are way up, and we don't know why. And it's the Food and Drug Administration's, especially for young people, by the way. It's crazy. And, you know, as conservatives, we're pro-business, but we shouldn't be slaves to business. And we should really worry about, okay, so this younger generation is the most suicidal, most alcohol addicted, most drug addicted, most anxious, most depressed generation in history. And it's also, we have the most obese country we've ever seen. Isn't that kind of what the FDA and the CDC exist to try to address? And instead, the FDA is, you know, they're like flirting on like DEI, like how racism impacts, you know, food like selections. Yeah, look, I think it's not overly complicated. We need to blow up the food triangle that we teach every single kid. We are far too reliant and pushing of carbohydrates and cheap carbohydrates, especially like cereal and bread. And we are not as pushing of lean proteins and fats. There's three types of food. It's protein, fats, carbohydrates. Everything falls into those three things.
True.
You need two of those, not all three, to live. You need proteins and fats. You do not need carbohydrates to live. It's that simple. Now, you might need carbohydrates to get your blood sugar up, but I cannot emphasize this enough. The FDA, they lied repeatedly during COVID and manipulated their behaviors and covered it up. And I think that we need a Truth and Reconciliation Committee. If Donald Trump becomes the next president of the United States, we need to have a Warren Commission-style report issued for all the lies. Yes, final point on that.
So the statistic is about 60% of our foods are processed.
Yes.
So what is a way you think the FDA can possibly turn that around?
It's not as much the FDA. It has to start with a culture change, honestly. And I mean, there's a lot of proposals out there. I'm not that into the weeds of how to actually change that. But the best first way is that you don't have to eat processed foods. You don't have to. In fact, you can reject processed foods and eat whole foods. And I mean, there's a list of like the worst things you could possibly eat. And Americans are like the top consumers of those. So.
But I feel as even our whole foods are being.
They're poisoned, too.
Are poisoned as well through pesticides.
Correct.
Being put into the soil during planting, and as well as stripping, let's say for bread example, stripping the wheat of its just natural components. I guess bleached flour would be the best way to put it.
All right. Well, thank you for the question, and I totally agree. We have to change the way we eat and change the way we grow food in this country. Thank you.
Hello, Charlie Kirk. Thank you so much for coming for Texas Tech. My name is Naylin. I'm one of the TikToker at content, Your Daily Entertainment, and I did a viral video that you actually commented on. Do you remember?
No.
Okay, it's how many genders are there, that video?
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah, that was you, okay.
Yeah, that was me. A quick question, what did you think about that video?
Obviously, I liked it, yeah.
Okay, cool. All right, so come through.
Good work, man. Keep on creating content.
Thank you, exposing them, right? Anyways, the real question is, if you had a power to change the mind of every single liberal of one political issue, what would it be and why?
Oh, wow, that's a good question. If I had the power to change their mind on one issue, very simple. I believe if I could get every single liberal to believe that there was a God and they were not God,
woo!
The country would be a much better place.
Amen. Amen.
Thank you. Thank you.
Trump 24.
Thank you.
Don't worry, I didn't bring any tortillas. My question pertains to the federal income tax. How was the U.S. government able to fund its spending before the federal income tax was implemented, and would going back to that still be functional with how much the U.S. has grown since then?
Well, we used to fund it through tariffs mostly. And the government was a lot smaller. And we ran into a problem with World War I, because we wanted to be able to fund our incursion into World War I. And so we had to also simultaneously pass the Federal Reserve Act, which basically allowed us to print money on demand, which started a 100-year cycle for us to be able to open up the money supply whenever we want. And you're living at the last gasp of basically cheap money and fiat currency. So you cannot get back to funding the government with lower taxes and or keeping more of your stuff if you don't actually first fix the currency. And the Federal Reserve is turning out to be a disaster for working men and women of this country. If you do not have assets, you get 10% poorer every year right now, minimum. And just look at groceries. That's the best way to look at it. Look at homes. Look at just durable goods. And so the Federal Reserve is the number one place that I would focus at. But we're probably already too far down the runway. I mean, we're borrowing $1 trillion every 100 days at this point.
Gotcha. So is there anything that we could do that, if we were to abolish the federal income tax, that would get us back to a stronger economy and keeping more of our stuff?
Yeah, I mean, the problem is we just have so much government to pay for. We have a $6 trillion federal budget, and we're not even reaching that, right? So we're borrowing about $2.5 to $3 trillion. We're borrowing almost half, not quite, almost half of the entire federal budget every single year. I would love to be able to abolish the income tax and get rid of the IRS, but we have to significantly cut government spending. We have way too much government spending in this country. We have so much waste, so much abuse. Government is too big, government used to be a lot smaller, and that's why I kind of started with Texas, is that the spirit of Texas used to be kind of almost no government. It was the spirit of the West, is you take care of yourself. And so I'd love to get back to that.
Thank you.
God bless. Thank you.
First things first, it's an honor to meet you.
I love the hat.
Oh, thank you. I actually got it because of you.
Yeah, that was the one that I was in Portland, and that young lady threw it on the ground. That's right, when I was wearing it. So.
Lately, I wanted to truly find my faith because I didn't know if in my heart I believed in God or not. And so I went around from church to church and person to person of different backgrounds trying to figure out what they believed and why. And I've heard countless arguments everywhere and all sorts of reasons they believe, why they believe their faith. But now I'm going to admit I'm more confused than I've ever been in my life because everyone claims to have a different answer and several different reasons why. I wanted to believe that there's a creator and I might have a purpose, but now I don't know what to believe in, if anything at all. So what can I or someone else like me do to deal with severe doubts and uncertainty in spiritual guidance, finding meaning, and trying to find the truth?
First of all, God bless you for the courage to come up and ask that question. I think that's great. I think that's really great. Have you visited a lot of churches, too? Is that what you're saying? Or
yes.
So let me tell you where I think American evangelical community gets things wrong, especially the last 20 or 30 years. I did not come up with this, but I'm an adoptee. It's by Ray Comfort. You may know him. He's an author and a theologian. And it's very simple. It's that most churches will tell you the following. Give your life to Christ, and you're going to have a wonderful life ahead of you. Now, that's partially true. My life is much better thanks to I gave my life to Jesus. But it's not a pain-free life, and it's not an easy life. So we must start first with the entirety of the scriptures, right, which starts with the first truth claim. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. So this is, in my personal opinion, I'd love to have you study Aquinas' seven proofs of God, self-evident. We have an intelligible world. You look around us. We can discover it. We can know it. We can reason with it. The idea that we even have reason is a belief that there is a creator, because it's such an incomprehensible sort of idea. American Christianity gets wrong, though, is that they refuse to ever tell you about the wrath that is awaiting you in the next life, and they only tell you that your life is going to dramatically improve in the short term. So in the scriptures we learn, especially in the Decalogue, the Ten Commandments, basically the ten rules for life. And if you study it very closely, you realize that you break a lot of those commandments sometimes on a daily basis. And so the more you study the law teaches you about the nature of sin, and it points you to Christ. So here's a beautiful question during Holy Week. This week we remember that it wasn't just a cool dude, it wasn't just a motivational speaker, it wasn't just a good figure in history, but we as Christians believe God incarnate took human flesh to dwell among us, live a perfect life, die an unjust death after doing amazing miracles, performing an incredible ministry, doing things that changed the world forever, died and rose again on the third day, which we celebrate on Sunday. Now, the significance of this is I could give you a million different reasons why that is compelling, right? The fact that we have four different accounts and using historical type analysis, we do not have anything close to that kind of analysis of any sort of historical events that are thousands of years old. I could give you the argument that it was women witnesses that saw Jesus. So if you were going to make up after he rose from the dead, so if you were going to make something up, why would you have the resurrection story with female witnesses? I can go through all the different stories about how there's never been an archaeological discovery that's contradicted the truth of the Bible. But here's the final thing is you need to just open up your heart more than all that. And so that's the most important thing. And it's only going to happen through prayer. And it's going to happen through God, are you real? Jesus, come into my life. And I could do all that other stuff, but I could tell you this, that there is a creator. And he left us his word as living evidence to show us exactly how to live, what he's done, the purpose for all of us. And I can understand that you're confused, but understand that there might be a million different answers of how they see the universe, but there's only one truth and there's only one life. And this Holy Week, my prayer for you is that you'll consider and welcome Jesus Christ into your heart, who will transform you and will save you from the wrath that is to come and save you from what happens, because we cannot live under God's perfect and pleasing will. Do you have a follow-up?
No, that's all I have. I want to thank you for that.
I'm going to pray for you. What's your name?
My name's Cameron.
God, please work in Cameron's life this Holy Week. We pray that your Holy Spirit will move. And Cameron, God bless you for your courage, and Lord, we pray for your Holy Spirit to enter Cameron. We'll be praying for you in Jesus' name. God bless you, Cameron.
Amen.
Hi, Charlie. My name is Catherine. Whew, I'm freaking out right now. Oh my gosh. This is really cool. I wish I could talk to you about like anything and everything. I'm from El Paso, so I live with the border crisis. I know exactly what we're dealing with. I've seen tons of illegal immigrants get cuffed on the way to school and stuff like that. It's kind of crazy. But I wanted to talk about abortion, something that's very, it sucks and I hate it, and I wish that we could make it illegal right now. I am curious as to see how you're going to respond with the foster care system, because it's a very broken system, and I know there's like a lot of women that just give up their babies and they don't have anywhere to go. So my question is, what are the steps to take for such poor systems, and should we make abortion illegal first, then the foster care system to take care after that, or how should we go?
Yeah, so the foster care system is too hard to navigate. My solution is not loved by the left, which is I think that Christian ministries and churches should help facilitate the adoption of children as a kind of a easier clearinghouse than the government. Mm-hmm. There are a million abortions in this country every single year. There are 2 million couples on the adoption waiting list. I think it needs to be all simultaneous, and we also hopefully can try to make, you know, abortion an unthinkable act in this country and one that is harder and harder to do. You guys here in West Texas have done a great job of that, and you guys should be, you know, really encouraged for your heroism and your bravery in that regard. But it's the rest of the country is leaning more into abortion more so than ever before, and it's happening in a horrific way. But yes, as far as the foster care system, the only issue I have, it needs to be done in a way where you cannot allow predators an easier way to get their hands on children, because a lot of people still game the foster care system, there's two things. They're not foster care and adoption. They're technically two different things, but they are related, and the adoption system in this country is absolutely messed up. It's beyond screwed up in a lot of different ways. So all of the above type approach.
Okay, awesome. Thank you so
God
much.
Bless you.
Thank you for being here.
Hi, Charlie. My name is Riley, and I'm very excited that you're here. I love listening to your speeches and debates. My question is, in a world where society teaches promiscuity as a healthy part of dating, what would be your best advice to counter it?
Great question. Well, first, just say no to hookup culture and save yourself for marriage. That is the first thing that I would say. And we don't talk enough about piety, and you should just save yourself for your eventual partner. And if you've already, you know, not done that, then you just start now, right? If you've already, you know, it's not too late to start now. It's not like, well, I've already, you know, broken that and, you know, might as well keep on going. That's a bad argument, so don't do that. But everything comes at a price. And especially for young women, Free sex does not impact both sexes equally. Free sex is far more damaging to women than it is for men. It's damaging for men, but it is far more damaging to women than it is for men, because women view sex very personal, very relational. Men view sex differently, and that's just how God wired us, right? And far less so than women. So how do you reject it? You need to try to embrace piety. Try to find other friends that are not into hookup culture. Pray for your future husband. And I could tell you that if you are saving yourself for marriage, you become a very, very attractive individual for men, where all they see is OnlyFans girls walking all over the place and these digital prostitutes that are willing to sell themselves, you know, for $10 a month. And so, which it is, it's digital prostitution if you have an OnlyFans page, right? And by the way, for those of you that are men that have OnlyFans accounts, you're no better than the girls that are selling bodies, by the way. You're subsidizing modern day digital prostitution. So it goes both ways. Okay? It goes both ways. So there are a lot of great men in this country, and then my advice is try to get married early. Try to get married early. I'm a big proponent of this. The hardest emails I have to read are early 30-something women who waited, were not able to find a partner, and, you know, they earn a good living. They live in Dallas. They have a nice apartment. They're a partner at a law firm, and they have a lot of cats.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Hey, Charlie, my name's Ben. Thank you so much for being here. And my question for you is, do you believe that the 2020 election was rigged? And if so, what can people do who do not support Biden do to prevent it from happening again without stooping to the level of radical leftists that we hate so much?
It's a great question. Yes, it was rigged. It's a great question. I love Texas Tech. This is great. This is not Austin. This is not Austin. I've spoke there. This is a lot different. Yes, it was rigged. Let's be very clear. How was it rigged? Well, first, the one that we can all agree upon that we don't talk about enough, it was rigged through information warfare. One particular element was the Hunter Biden laptop. We were not allowed to discuss the Hunter Biden laptop on social media, on Twitter, on Facebook. The New York Post lost access to their Twitter account. In fact, it was so bad that 50 former intel agency officials came out and they said that the Hunter Biden laptop was hallmark Russian disinformation, which then was used as a reason to censor this entire story. That very well could have been a decisive, in fact, polling shows that could have tilted the 2020 election to get Donald Trump reelected in 2020. Just that one issue. Not to mention all of the collusion between the FBI and Facebook, the Central Intelligence Agency, Five Eyes. And so they used all this different censorship through information warfare to stop dissident voices that we have now proven. Second part of rigging is you had $400 million from Mark Zuckerberg that was pumped in to urban centers across the country through the Center for Technology and Civic Life that created these drop boxes that allowed mass mail-in voting to continue and to be really, really widespread. People need to be held criminally accountable for what they did in the 2020 election, because it was a drive-by shooting for the U.S. Constitution. Finally, there's the mail-in ballots, which is, we had a lot of shenanigans and activity. This is harder to prove in a court of law, but we know that this occurred, that we have universal voter registration, tons of mail-in ballots that were sent all over. We did not have robust signature verification. We had days and days and days where they're counting the ballots, and people's faith and integrity in that system went down. So let me tell you what we can do. Let's go through the list. Number one, Twitter has new ownership now, thankfully, and I think it's one of the reasons why we have a fighting chance to compete in November. Number two, this is why, albeit I'm a very big critic of Speaker Johnson at times, I have him coming on the show in a couple days, we have to make sure that we all of a sudden don't hand over the gavel to Speaker Jeffries, because we need the ability to have oversight hearings in the middle of the election if we believe any of these tech companies are interfering with our ability to basically have the 2024 election operate without the narrative being interrupted. And then finally, the mail-in ballot thing is the toughest question. Wisconsin has minorly changed their laws. Georgia a little bit. Arizona is still kind of a mess. But we have to play with the rules in front of us, which is why at Turning Point Action, we're kind of taking the cough medicine. We realize it's not the best thing for us, but we're going to do it. We're hiring hundreds of full-time on-the-ground ballot chasers to go chase early ballots, and we're going to try to use the rules that they have built against them to God willing, you know, get towards victory in November. So awesome. No guarantees, but we're going to try our best.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. If you disagree, guys, we'll get you on up there. Yes, we'll keep going for a little bit. Yeah.
All right. My name's James. It's honestly an honor to meet you or talk in front of you. I'm actually nervous as crap. Sorry. Pardon my French. But earlier on the border crisis that you mentioned Harris County, and that is where I'm from, and it is a war zone. My friends have been shot at in Whataburger parking lots. Road rages incidents are awful. People are getting gunned down, chased into parking lots, beaten, dragged out of their cars. But lately, I'm also looking at the news, because everyone knows that are my friends. I hate Joe Biden with a passion. Like, I cannot stand that man. Like, and I'm looking right now, and apparently they're like, oh, he is winning in the polls. He just boosted up. And part of my question is that true, or is that a bunch of bull crap? Because I think it's bull, but...
Well, yeah, he's winning in some polls. I mean, look, we can't get too cocky. I mean, this is important. They control so much in this country. They control the media. They control Goldman Sachs. They control Citibank. They control the social media companies. So in certain states, Biden has the election apparatus kind of at his hand. This thing's going to be very close. It shouldn't be. It should be a 50-state wipeout, but it's going to be very close. And we have to walk into this thing not cocky but humble and ask God to use us as faithful servants and to say, use us as your vessel. Use us for your will. But I would just tell your friends, like, let's not poll watch, you know, let's see what the final result is, because you could drive yourself crazy, because some polls show that Donald Trump is up. And look, we cannot be arrogant. That's one of the most important things. It's easy if you just go to events like this where you around to think like we are the majority. I think we are the majority, but we don't have an election system that represents the will of the people as accurately as we did 20 or 30 years ago. You got to be honest about that. I think we have to be humble, work our tail off, and then on election day, pray to God that he'll have mercy on this great nation.
Another question I have.
Yeah, really quick.
All right. So I've seen you on Instagram and all those people that are censoring your speech, because my job actually did that, because I posted something on Instagram against Palestine and someone told my boss about that and I got removed. How do you deal with that? Because they're screaming F off fascists and you're just sitting there calmly. How do you deal with it?
Yeah, here's my best answer to that. My natural temperament is actually to kind of get upset, but only thanks to the fruit of the Spirit do I have self-control. And I'm going to do my best here, but I think it's love, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, gentleness, and self-control. I know I forgot one. Which one did I forget? Joy. Well, yeah. And faithfulness. See, I did my best, okay? I remember the end of it, self-control. But honestly, dive into the scriptures, pray for it, and you will be given it. It is the fruit of the Spirit. And without the Spirit, I'd be screaming something back to them when they say F off fascist. So
it's
thanks to God's infinite mercy. It really is.
Thank you so much, and let's go, Brandon.
Okay, thank you.
Are you ready to lose weight but not sure where to start? I understand. I was right where you are 2 years ago. Let me tell you why I chose the PhD Weight Loss and Nutrition Program. First, Dr. Ashley Lucas has her PhD in chronic disease and sports nutrition. Her program is based on years of research and is science-based. Second, the PhD program starts in nutrition. There is so much more. They know that 90% of permanent change comes from the mind, and they work on eliminating the reason you gained this weight in the first place. There's no shortcuts, pills, or injections, just solid, science-based nutrition and behavior change. And finally, most importantly, I lost 30 pounds. Look, they're amazing. If you want to lose weight, you got to go to myphdweightloss.com. I was just texting with Dr. Ashley Lucas today. If you're ready to lose weight for the last time, call 864-644-1900. Go online at myphdweightloss.com. Do what I did and what hundreds of my listeners have done and call today, 864-644-1900. I recommend their program. Dr. Ashley Lucas has her PhD in chronic disease and sports nutrition. Her program is based on years of research and is science-based. Second, the PhD program starts in nutrition, but it's so much more. Go to myphdweightloss.com, myphdweightloss.com. Call 864-644-1900. I lost over 30 pounds. Dr. Ashley Lucas, great American. Check it out, myphdweightloss.com.
Mr. Charlie Kirk, it's an honor to meet you. I've been following you since 2020. I'm in love with you. Not in love with you. Sorry.
Not San Francisco, man.
I'm just messing with you. So I'm a country artist. My name is Nate Reed. I'm on Spotify and everything. But the reason my question is about TikTok, because I use TikTok as a platform to reach fans.
And I've heard on the news everything going on with TikTok being shut down because China and the is stealing all the information and stuff and using that to take our identities and stuff. Is that true? And if so, what are we going to do about it?
Yeah, no, that's a great thing. So the bill has passed the House to not ban TikTok, but to make it be sold to an American company. With that being said, and I could go on about all the negatives that TikTok has literally shortened the attention span of young people. It has been the introductory vessel for the trans ideology in this country and is getting younger and younger people introduced to the idea of gender dysphoria, which leads to their disfiguration and chemical castration. Side note, any doctor, because I know there's a big medical center here, any doctor that butchers a child under transgender care should go to jail for the rest of their life, period. Okay? That just needs to be said. So with that being said, I actually oppose this bill because I don't trust the government and I don't trust all of a sudden speeding this bill through Congress because I think it's going to be used against us. I think that it will be used to censor us. And I can't stand TikTok. So I actually think I have one of the best arguments because I don't benefit from TikTok. I fight them every day. They've banned me, again, as I've said so many times. But with that being said, I would rather not give that power to the Biden regime to be able to censor our social media, to be able to demand that they're sold. Way too much power that I don't want to give. And the other reason is we're starting to see the golden era of the internet reemerge. Again, I'm not on TikTok, but I'm told that conservatives and Trump supporters are doing very, very well on TikTok. That's what I'm told. And that the message is getting out. In fact, someone said, Charlie, some of your videos have like 30 million views on TikTok. I said, okay, well, you know, not on my video. People repost my stuff, which I don't care. It's whatever. But I'm glad you're benefiting from it. Worst case scenario, it will be sold to an American company, but then we'll all of a sudden have transferred all this power to Joe Biden. And if there's anything we have learned in recent years, power you give to the government will be power abused. Thank you so much.
Hey, what's going on, Charlie? I appreciate you being here. You know, it's my first time being at an event like this. I've always watched from YouTube, but, you know, it's my first time here. My question is more about parenting. So me personally, I'm a young adult. I'm in the service, and I have my wife here with me, and we're about to have a kid. So, yeah, you see how we're about to. Yeah, so it's going to be mine. Obviously, you know, it's going to be my first kid. I'm nervous like a normal parent. But one of the biggest things that's, things that's weighing on my conscience as I'm about to be a dad, you know, is just the environment I'm raising my kid in. So, like, I was lucky to be born in a time where it was less, you know, chaotic with all these, like, gender this, gender that, LGBT, ABCD, whatever you want to call it. Like, all that stuff was not as relevant when I was growing up. But my kid, you know, he's about to come into a time where I feel like we're just fighting to know what man and woman is. And that's something that's, like, super basic to me growing up. So, like, me as a dad, the last thing I want to do is to hear my son come back to me saying, hey, Dad, I'm going to a college to hear about what a man and woman is, even though, you know, 15 years down the line, I'm like, yeah, I did that back when I was, you know, age or whatever. So, like, that's my biggest question is, like, how do I have the confidence in knowing that the life that I'm about to bring into this world is something that I can at least control to some point? You know, God controls everything, but Amen. Something I can control at some point where I don't have him going, you know, having to fight these trials or these weird people out here.
What a great question. Isn't that just terrific? I love that. I'm a new father. We have a 20-month-old, so I'm by no means an expert. But you'll learn that kids spell love T-I-M-E. And that's one of the most important things that as a father, every minute of time that you can spend is valuable and precious, right? It's not as easy. You might have to, you know, serve and be deployed and all that. Yeah. The most important thing you can do. Remember the scriptures tell us children are a blessing of the Lord and you are the guardian of that child, right? Which means you must protect that child from outside influences. There are three types of people in this world. There are predators, there are infants, and the protectors of infants. You fall into one of those three categories. So you're about to welcome an infant into the world. Your job is to protect the infant from the predators. And the predators take many different forms, through groomers, through social media toxins, through criminals, through all these different things. And especially as the head of the household, the male, you must constantly be looking at the threats, right? You must constantly be looking at the attack vectors because there is a growing unregulated, unchecked community of predators in this country that are coming after children younger and younger and younger. And that is not an exaggeration. We call them groomers. They're in our schools. They're in our society. And it's you as the father to instill values from a very young age. And so I'm by no means an expert, but I could tell you this. I have seen over many years parents that have brought their kids to Turning Point events, parents that have exposed their kids to these ideas, and it bears fruit. The earlier you introduce them to these ideas, the earlier you get them excited about Jesus and the Word and the Scriptures. And the final thing is the creepy thing that I've learned, not creepy, is how much even an 18-month mimics the parents' behavior and how much that they are in the mold. Everything you do, from what you say to how you act. So not as if there's like enough pressure already on you,
yeah,
right?
You know.
Right? But look at that as like, I got to be the best version of myself. And as soon as you get married, you are no longer a boy and you become a man. But when you become a father, a whole different thing comes in, right? Because becoming a husband is awesome, and that you'll always have that. Father is like a different level, right?
Yeah.
And balancing the paranoia with the, you know, the fun times is something that all of us new fathers have to realize. And I get told this all the time from parents. I don't know if I would have kept my head if I had to raise a kid in today's America. I get that told all the time. Because it's just, it's a different world. But with God, all things are possible.
Yep. Amen.
God bless you, man. Thank you.
Hello. My name's Carly. And like as everyone else has said, thank you for coming. So as a woman who has played sports ever since I was a little girl, went to play Division I basketball in college, what is the cure to the problem of transgender playing college and women's sports?
Great question. The men of this country need to demand that biological men will never, ever be able to compete in female sports again. We need to draw a line, and this is unacceptable. They're narcissists, they're cheats, they got deep-seated mental problems, and they need counseling. And they don't need us to reaffirm their gender dysphoria so they can cheat their way to victory in weightlifting and swimming, in wrestling. Then finally, this is a harder ask, but female athletes need to start to do massive boycotts. And I know this is a big ask, but we need to get to a place where if a biological man is competing against females in a championship or in a consequential sporting event, the biological women just say, we're not competing. We're not going to do it. We're going to do a sit out. We're going to do a walkout. This needs to become a movement, and shame on the NCAA and Charlie Baker that has allowed women to be preyed upon. Remember, three types of people. And Charlie Baker at the NCAA, former Republican governor of Massachusetts, fumbles over himself on this issue because he's afraid of the alphabet mafia. He's afraid to stand up to the transgender jihadis who go after you viciously, and they say, you must affirm because I'm a girl. No, actually, Mr. Thomas, you are not a girl.
Yes.
You're a cheater who is dressing like a girl. And you're a perv. And you're a creep.
Yes.
And you're not even that good of a swimmer when you compete against biological men. And we have done a lot of speaking events with Riley Gaines, who has done more to expose the insanity and the darkness within this. But the women's sports thing is just one element of this. The only way you fix it is you say no. No, you actually can't compete here. And here's the solution. People say, what's the solution? Well, first of all, you're like acting as if it's a problem. Okay, Mr. Thomas, you can use whatever name you want. Just swim with the boys. You could call yourself a girl. Swim with the boys. If you win, which you won't because you're not very good, we'll say that you're a transgender swimmer. Oh, so we have to reconfigure the entire sporting process for a fringe minority. So we can no longer have standards of excellence with just females. We now have to insult all the women that have worked their life to become the best in their sport or their craft, so that somebody who has higher testosterone, more bone density, higher muscle mass, more lung capacity, can scoot on over and cheat themselves to victory. The NCAA, they're facing some big lawsuits, and they're going to be judged in history for their cowardice and their silence and turning their back on women. Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll take a couple more. And if you disagree, final call, it is Lubbock. So we got two disagreements. So there you go. Yeah.
Hi, nice to meet you. So the right kind of has a reputation of being uncool. And what can we do both? What can each of us do individually, and what can we do collectively to kind of dispel that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what even being cool means anymore. Like, I mean, I don't really care about being cool. I care about being right. And I mean, you kind of look at, I could name three people that wouldn't be considered cool that could draw bigger crowds than like your everyday rapper. Like Jordan Peterson, Ben Shapiro, and Matt Walsh would draw a bigger crowd on most campuses than like a cool celebrity. And so the left is also making themselves uncool, like being the pronoun police and going around constantly censoring people's speech. There's zero countercultural energy on the left. They control everything. And, you know, being young and being cool is kind of being countercultural. So, and if you're a real rebel in high school, are you a liberal? No, you kind of just fit in. You wear your mask and you take every, you know, Pfizer vaccine and, like, you know, you use the right pronouns. If you want to be a rebel, wear a MAGA hat to your local high school. That's being a rebel. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Hi, thank you for being here. My name is Caleb. So my question's got a little bit of background, so I apologize. But just to start off, I believe dating is for marriage. I believe dating for the sake of dating is futile. That is something that I believe is backed up by the Bible, as it seems clear that dating for the sake of dating or for fun is a recipe to fall into sexual immorality. I believe that people should save themselves for marriage. I have been dating my current girlfriend for almost a year and a half, and we both agree with this sentiment. Some of our friends at church say they agree with us, but then they say that before they look to settle down, they want to date around and find what kind of people they like. And while they do not see it like this, their argument sounds very similar to the idea that people should sleep around to find their sexual preferences before settling down. I believe this idea that people should date around is a path towards sin. How should my girlfriend and I go about explaining our point of view and the dangers of dating casually in our modern world?
Yeah, I mean, just go back to Scripture. If you're talking to Christians, cohabitation is a sin, period. And to live with another that, if you are not married, just invites sexual immorality. And so, yeah, I mean, how you explain it, you shouldn't have to explain it. You have what hopefully they would want, which is you're saving yourself for marriage. And let's talk about why it's important to save yourself for marriage. Sex is the most personal, intimate thing that God gave us. And so why would you want to share that with anything other than the person you want to spend the rest of your life with, your soulmate, where you become one with that individual? Why would you want to all of a sudden be like, well, I've shared that now with seven other people. I don't even remember five of their names. You have now diluted the most beautiful and, dare I say, almost holy thing that God gave us between men and women. It destroys it. It deteriorates it. It waters it down. And the church has not done a good enough job of really holding up this ideal of marriage because they want to fit into modern culture, which is get married earlier. Save yourself for marriage. And so how you navigate it, just go back to Scripture. That's how I would. And you honestly don't worry that if your friends really believe that, they might not be that close of friends, to be perfectly honest. So
I have one follow-up to that. Their point of view isn't that they're going to go and act promiscuous. They just think that they should go date a few people and just expect it to work out well, that nothing's actually going to happen, that they're going to move from person to person to person until they find the right one, and that somehow they're going to stay pure. I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, again, well, so are they dating or are they shopping?
I think they're shopping.
Yeah, exactly. So they just need to use the right term. So dating is the practice. And again, you can date multiple people before you get married. Let me be very clear. But every one of those dates or the people you date with must be the intention. The first question is this someone I can spend the rest of my life with? You need to say that in the first 5 minutes. It's not like, is this person attractive? Do I like this person? No. If that question becomes all of a sudden answers itself, well, then the date is over. Does that make sense?
Yes, sir.
So if they're dating with the intent to marry, then yes, you can have multiple partners that you can date. However, most of those people that do that, they're kind of dating more for sport than they are for actual marriage.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll do a couple more.
Hey, how's it going, Charlie? How are you? Awesome. I just had a quick question. So you obviously believe that there's a heaven and a hell and there's a God and there's a devil, yes. I was just going to speed up the question. Do you believe the Antichrist is alive right now?
I don't know. Could be. I don't know.
Also, can I say a quick prayer for you real quick?
That's okay, all right. Sure, yeah.
Dear Heavenly Father, Lord, thank you for his day. Thank you for just bringing Charlie to this event, Lord. We're so blessed to have him, Lord. I pray that as his travels go on, Lord, that you'll just keep him safe, him and his family, Lord. And just thank you for blessing him to be a father, Lord. Just so amazed for that, Lord. Just pray you keep him safe, Lord. In Jesus' name, amen.
Beautiful, man. Thank you. Thank you.
Can you sign
it? Going to sign it? Yeah, just we'll get it signed. Just go right over there. Okay. We'll do it. Thanks, man. Do you have a pen? Happy to sign it. Thanks for the prayer.
How's it, man? All right. Hi, Charlie. How are you? First of all, I just want to say thank you for coming to Texas Tech. I just want to also note firsthand, I have seen the rise in the conservative movement for Zoomers, as we're called. Firsthand, I am a political activist. I have worked for Congressman Richard Hudson, and I am also a member of Turning Point USA Old Dominion University in Norfolk, Virginia. So I can say you are doing good work, and Zoomers are very much growing to be conservative. So before I ask my question, I want to give some context on why I believe what I believe. My dad died while deployed with the Army overseas, and I'm also about to leave for the Army next month. So thank you. So obviously I'm eyeing the current state of global affairs with Russia, Ukraine, Israel, Iran, China. So my question for you is, even though I'm a conservative, my main issue with the current state of the GOP seems to be that they want to tuck their tail and resort back to a 1900s isolationist movement that ultimately failed. Do you believe that U.S. global hegemony is under attack, and do you think that it's in the interest of America to maintain a strong, aggressive foreign policy towards countries like Russia, China, Iran, and Palestine, which doesn't exist, who continue to continuously undermine our interests and our sphere of influence?
Some of that I agree with. I'm not sold on the Russia thing. I don't think that we should. I know this is the provocative thing. I don't know why we're enemies with Russia. I don't understand it. I'm not saying they're good. They're a bunch of gangsters and thugs. But keeping Russia neutral was one of the best moves of Donald Trump. And honestly, we fought alongside the Russians to defeat the Nazis in World War II. It would have been geopolitically smart not to antagonize them. We are now closer and closer to a war with Russia that has no national security interest whatsoever. In fact, I believe the Mexican drug cartels pose a far greater threat to America than Russia does. To answer your question, I push back against some of my conservative friends where we agree on that issue. I do believe that America should remain the benevolent superpower. I do. However, that is being abused by the current regime and the neoliberal order. I am not a neoliberal. I do not believe.
I'm not either. I'm a neoconservative.
No, I know. Well, a neoliberal is a neoconservative. Yeah. But yeah. So I don't believe we should invade the world and invite the world. I think the Iraq war was a mistake. I think that we stayed in Afghanistan far too long. And the way that Joe Biden withdrew was obviously an insult to the country, an insult to all of us. And I think that the last 20 years has been more foreign policy failures than successes out of Washington, D.C. With that being said, with the rise of China, I do believe that we should have a strong sword and be willing to wave it, because I believe that the Chinese Communist Party is one of the great adversaries, not Russia. And so that would be my personal take on that. And endless wars have been a big issue, and we have to be very – we have to understand that there is a national security state, an intel apparatus in D.C. that does not exist to try to win wars but keep them going, keep themselves getting rich, and keep on sending people like you to go fight in those no-win wars. So I think I'm somewhat of a moderate – in your question, in that sense. Some agree, some disagree.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Thank you.
I also have something for you.
Oh, you got something? Cool. I'm getting all these gifts. I love this. Oh, thank you so much. God bless you, man. Thank you.
Yeah.
You said this was your dad's? Oh, my gosh. Wow. Wow. That's really – thank you, man. God bless his service. Wow. Well, that was a great event, everybody. I want to close with just a couple thoughts. This is a very, very consequential year. And you guys, it might feel safe. It might feel comfortable here in West Texas. We need West Texas to roar in 2024. We need every single one of you to stay engaged, to stay involved. We need to run up the score here. Support your local Turning Point chapter. Get involved in the local community. And understand, the progressive Eastern forces are coming here. And they're trying to organize. They're trying to mobilize. You have to stay on your guard. You have to stay constantly understanding that they're trying to do some very bad things here. I get asked all the time, Charlie, are you optimistic or are you pessimistic? If I said I was optimistic, you would go home and do nothing because you say, oh, we're going to win because Charlie said he's optimistic. If I said I was pessimistic, you go home and do nothing because, oh, Charlie said he's pessimistic, I go home and do nothing. You have to fight. That is my answer. And when people misinterpret that, oh, it means hand-to-hand combat. That means you have to organize. You have to register voters. You have to get involved at the local level. You have to contest for your views. Some of you might say, Charlie, I've already done everything that's been asked of me. I show up to events like this. I bought the pillow. I've done everything that's been asked of me. MyPillow.com, by the way. Promo code Kirk, just so we're clear. We need all of you in the fight for a better and brighter future. We need Texas to be Texas again. And with that, I say thank you and God bless Texas. God bless you guys.
Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thanks so much for listening and God bless.